The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
So my name is Jiryu, and I'm going to start by sharing three images, and then I'm going to describe them in case you're listening on a podcast or can't see these. So think to yourself, when you're reading the news, or you're thinking about the state of the world, which of these three images describes your mindset the best? This one? Or number two? Or number three? So image number one, this is Edvard Munch's 1893 painting, The Scream. There's an emaciated figure. It's standing on a bridge. It's holding its face in its hands. Its mouth is open in a howl. There's a woozy, disorienting, apocalyptic landscape, and the sky is red, streaked. Munch described the inspiration for this painting. He said, "One evening, I was walking along a path. The city was on one side and the fjord below. I felt tired and ill. I stopped and looked out over the fjord. The sun was setting and the clouds turning blood red. I sensed a scream passing through nature. It seemed to me that I heard the scream. I painted this picture, painted the clouds as actual blood. The color shrieked. This became the scream." The second image is a now famous internet meme. It's a dog sitting at a table with a cup of coffee, and it's wearing a little bowler hat, and it's got a silly smile, and the house all around it is catching fire. There are billows of smoke under the ceiling, and the dog says, "This is fine." This is part of a six-panel comic where the dog goes on to say, "I'm okay with the events that are unfolding currently." Its arm catches fire. It says, "That's okay. Things are going to be okay." And then its face melts off. This was drawn in 2013 by a webcomic artist named Casey Green, and people share it on the internet to indicate that there is some crisis that you ought to be panicking over, but you are oblivious or in denial. And then the third image is Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. This version has four arms. It was painted on a cave wall in Nepal in the 12th century, and he has a slight smile on his face. Avalokiteshvara was first mentioned in the Avatamsaka Sutra, written about 2,000 years ago, and he's called Avalokiteshvara there, but that's somehow a typo. I've learned in my research that maybe he was originally called Avalokitesvara. Avalokiteshvara means the down-looking lord, like a lord who is looking down on the earth from heaven. But Avalokitesvara, probably the original, means sound perceiver. And that's how we usually think of this bodhisattva, as the one who hears the cries of the world. This is the bodhisattva of compassion who responds to our suffering. A little bit later in the Lotus Sutra, Avalokiteshvara has many forms described as both male or female. And when they came to China, and I'm going to show you the next slide there, he's called Guanyin. This is a wooden statue in the Met, carved in the 11th or 12th century. And in Japan, she's usually female and called Kanzeon or Kwanon or Canon. Here, this is a contemporary statue where she's pouring out the water of compassion from her jug of compassion water. And one of my favorite bits of trivia is that Canon camera used to be Quanon camera, and this was one of the early Canon camera logos. This was actually etched on the top of some of the early cameras. So I'm sharing these images to ask you, how do you respond to the suffering of the world? When you hear the cries of the world, are you smiling or not? At the Village Zendo, we're all on the Bodhisattva path. We chant the Bodhisattva vows. We should take Bodhisattvas like Kanzeon as our role models. But I don't think that we are smiling enough. Zenshin Kaplow gave a terrific talk at the Zendo a couple of weeks ago about the courage of the Bodhisattva. And it's very insightful, and I encourage you to listen to that. But I'm not talking today about the courage of a Bodhisattva. I'm talking about the cheerfulness. So consider those three images, the scream, the oblivious dog in the burning house, or the smiling Kanzeon. Which way are you? I hear a lot of depression or exhaustion from people at the Village Zendo or my friends. A lot of people who care about justice and democracy and climate. Among liberals in general, mental health in the United States is not very good. And I think that this is partly because of our tendency to focus on the negative. What I don't hear people do is make it their goal to cheer up and enjoy their lives despite the daily crises. So I'm going to try to convince you that that last image, the smiling Kanzeon, is your role model. And I want you to make it your goal to try to be cheerful and enjoy your life no matter what world events you hear about. And I have three reasons why you should do this. Number one, the world isn't going to hell. Number two, you're a more effective Bodhisattva if you're cheerful. And number three, emptiness. So, number one, the world isn't going to hell. And do you think it is? Do you think we're all going to die of global warming, or that people are starving everywhere, or that the world is getting more violent? You can slice the statistics in an infinite number of ways, but overall, life has improved for nearly everyone, and it'll almost certainly continue to improve for a long time. For example, global poverty is declining rapidly. There's a statistic called the International Poverty Line. It is now defined as living on less than $2.15 a day. Kind of the famous stat is extreme poverty is those living on less than a dollar a day. It's been adjusted. So the number of people below that line has decreased from nearly 40% of people in 1990 to less than 10% today. In other words, the number of people living in extreme poverty has fallen to a quarter of what it was in 1990. In the same period, infant mortality has fallen by half, and deaths from famine have become extremely rare over the past few decades. Now, I'm aware as I'm saying this that people are dying of hunger in Gaza right now. And I'm not minimizing that. What I'm saying is that we know that famine can be eliminated because we've almost done it. So there is no excuse not to completely achieve this. There's no reason why anybody should ever die of hunger again. And we can be motivated by knowing that we've practically achieved it. Of course, the big negative trend is global warming. But it doesn't mean that the planet is going to burn up or that we're all going to die. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says that the most likely scenario is 2 or 3 degrees Celsius of warming by the year 2100. So that means we're going to be hotter than the goal that they set, but not by that much. And it's far better than the worst case scenario. A lot of climate activists are going to cite scenarios where Manhattan is underwater and all of Africa is a desert, but that's based on the IPCC's worst case scenario, and it's now clear that that won't happen, partly because people are taking action. U.S. carbon emissions have been falling since 2007, for example, and as countries get richer, we tend to switch to more efficient energy sources. Also, in the past, we were really concerned about global overpopulation and that that would contribute to global warming and just resource overutilization in general. Global population is probably going to peak by the year 2100, if not sooner. And it will start shrinking after that, which should make it much, much easier to reduce carbon emissions. As countries get richer, their population growth slows to a halt and then falls. So taking everything together, the IPCC projects that over the next century, despite global warming, global poverty will keep falling, hunger will be rarer and rarer, average lifespan will increase, standards of living will increase. So global warming is bad, but humanity's progress continues anyway. Now, of course, there are crises. The last few years have been fairly violent. The wars with between Russia and Ukraine, between Israel and Hamas. And there have been a few other wars. Just as an example of how distorted our view is, the Tigray War in Ethiopia a few years ago had many more casualties than the Gaza War, but it was hardly covered in US media. Khan Zeyon doesn't lose her cool every time a war breaks out. She knows that there were much more violent years in the 70s and 80s than now. And of course, those years were dwarfed by World War I and World War II. And anyway, Khan Zeyon understands that human beings have the three poisons, greed, anger, and ignorance. And so war is going to keep breaking out predictably. And so she doesn't panic at every single individual new war. It doesn't change her mission. She just keeps trying to wake us all up. If you think that the world is going to hell, that's your view. It's arising in your mind. The world seems to be going to hell because of where you choose to focus, and that is probably influenced by how you consume the news. The news media needs your attention in order to survive. And so, of course, they focus on the negative. Global poverty just keeps falling year after year steadily, so that's not news. Continuous improvement is not news. News media organizations know that stories like that don't generate clicks. So be aware of this distortion. Seek out positive news. Seek out information about long-term trends, not the brief crises of today. Khan Zeyon sees the whole world over the long term. That's why she keeps smiling through every crisis. So, number one, the world isn't going to hell. Number two, you're a more effective bodhisattva if you're cheerful. If we imagine that today's wars are unusually bad, it can seem like we're losing the struggle for peace, and that's pretty discouraging. Or if we think that we're all doomed on a burning planet, that's super discouraging. I often hear people say that it would be immoral to bring children into this doomed world. Have children or don't, I don't have an opinion, but make an informed decision. Our children's lives will almost certainly be better than ours. And if we're aware of the progress that we're making towards peace, towards a carbon neutral economy, towards global prosperity, that encourages us to keep trying, to keep moving forward. There's a story about Kanzaon, and of course there are 100 different versions, so here's mine. Once upon a time, early in Kanzaon's career, he had one head and two arms, but he worked furiously to liberate beings. Then he took a break and he looked around and he saw that the number of suffering beings was still overwhelming, and he got so frustrated that his head exploded. Buddha put his head back together in a different form. Buddha gave Kanzaon 11 faces, 10 peaceful faces gazing in each of the 10 directions, and on top of them all, an 11th wrathful face for the beings who need a kick in the ass to be liberated. So Kanzaon goes back into action, but he tries to save all beings at once, and his arms move so fast that they shatter. So Buddha did some magical upgrades and gave Kanzaon 1,000 arms and 1,000 palms, and in each palm an eye, so that Kanzaon could give individual attention to every suffering being at once. But you and I are not 11-faced and 1,000-armed. Generally, we have one face each and at most two arms. If I tried to respond to every crisis simultaneously, my head would explode and my arms would fall off. I need to remember that this body and this brain is just one of Kanzaon's arms, or maybe one of her fingers, or one of her cells. I can't do it all, so I focus where I think I'm effective. I lead the Sangha at Sing Sing. I donate 10% of my income to GiveWell, which directs it to the most effective charities, generally things like vitamins and vaccines to people in Africa. I support the Village Zendo and the Newport Zen Center. I focus on a few things where I think I can be effective, and I'm satisfied. I am doing enough. Kanzaon responds to all the cries in the world. Nobody and nothing is left out, and my actions are a part of that. Since I'm doing enough, I don't read too much news. I don't need to know the ins and outs of US politics. I don't need to follow the daily events of every war. It's okay. I need to be informed, but I don't need daily information. If I got daily information, it would be bad for me. And if you take one piece of advice from this whole talk, it's this: turn off the news alerts on your phone. If Shakyamuni Buddha were here today, he'd make all his monks and nuns turn off their news alerts before he shaved their heads. It's essential. I'm going to share my screen again. And so, here's how to do it. You open settings, at least if you have an iPhone, and if the app you're getting your news alerts from is the New York Times, for example, you search for that, you tap on it in settings, you tap on notifications, and you turn them off. It is really important that you do this. And if you've got a smartwatch or an Android, I'm sure that it's equally easy. This is the most important thing that I've said so far. And it's the most important thing that I will say. You might be wondering, how can a bodhisattva ignore the daily news? What about bearing witness? Bearing witness is one of the tenets of the Zen Peacemaker Order, which we belong to. We occasionally recite these tenets and vow to follow them. So am I allowed to ignore the news? I am. Bearing witness is intimate. It's being fully present with somebody. It's entering their world and experiencing it with them. And you can't do that if you're being interrupted by New York Times headlines. The headlines are a media company's interpretation of the world, and bearing witness is your direct experience. The two things could not be more different from each other. If you turn off the news, it gives you the space to bear witness. And I find that when I bear witness on the street or in prison or with a friend who's having difficulty, I come away fulfilled and with the energy to act. So that was number two. A cheerful bodhisattva is an effective bodhisattva. And now my third and final argument for you is emptiness. Nothing is separate or solid. It only briefly appears to be that way. Beings appear and disappear constantly. They're like waves that rise up and then fall back into the ocean. Fairly soon, everybody in this room and everybody in this Zoom meeting will die. A little bit later than that, the sun's fusion reaction will use up all of its hydrogen. It'll switch to helium fusion. It will heat up and destroy the Earth. If humanity escapes the Earth and the solar system, we could survive a little while longer, but someday the whole universe will run out of energy and become cold and silent, and everything will die. And what I like about Buddhism is that we face the facts. We practice accepting death. Unlike the oblivious dog saying this is fine, we see the flames, we know what's going to happen, but we accept it because the beings that appear and disappear are just waves in the ocean. They are empty of meaning as individuals. They are inseparable parts of the magnificent whole. The knowledge of this fact is called prajnaparamita, wisdom perfected. And as the Heart Sutra tells us, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva practices deep prajnaparamita. The paradox of being a bodhisattva is to value each individual and care about their well-being while never forgetting that they are just a momentary expression of the whole shebang. They are never separable from it. And when we see this, our own peace of mind is stable. It doesn't depend on anything. It definitely doesn't depend on the daily news. A different bodhisattva, Samatra Bhadra Bodhisattva, says in the Avatamsaka Sutra, even though the void of space, together with the states of beings, with the karmas of beings, with the sorrows of beings, though all this will end, yet my approval and joy in the merits of all beings will not end. Samatha Bhadra isn't depressed by the thought of the end of the world. In fact, he sounds ecstatic because he knows that his joy doesn't depend on anything except his vow. So I've argued that the bodhisattva path is cheerful action and enjoying our lives. The bodhisattva vow isn't vowing to be depressed about the state of the world. It's vowing to be like Kanzeon, both in our attitude and in our action. So think again about those three images, the scream, the oblivious dog, the smiling bodhisattva. If you feel more like screaming than smiling, ask yourself, What about my practice is causing this result? How might I practice differently to get a different result? The hardest news for me to handle lately is the possibility of Trump's re-election, but I don't intend to be anxious about it. My method, instead of obsessively watching the news and checking the polls, is to just do what I can. Kaishan and I will lead a fundraiser for Biden this fall. We did that in 2020. We raised tens of thousands of dollars. I hope that we'll be able to do that again. I plan to take September and October off work and do a few things, including volunteering for campaigns for Democrats. My local congressman is a Democrat. We're in a swing district here in New Paltz, and our Democratic congressman won by 1%. So I feel like volunteering for his campaign is a pretty high leverage way to make a difference. And I think that electing Democrats is one of the most effective ways to combat global warming, to ensure human rights. Democrats are far from perfect. We all know that, but it looks like the Bodhisattva path to me. And it's my experience that obsessing about politics is depressing, but participating in politics is actually really fun. And it's also satisfying. So I'm going to do what I can during this campaign season, and then I will move on and I will enjoy my life. A bodhisattva never gets stuck. A bodhisattva's action is always flowing to the next thing. And if Trump wins anyway, I don't intend to be depressed about it. I'll keep up with the news as much as is useful, and that's it. I'll cheerfully work to contain the damage however I can, and then I'll move on and I'll enjoy my life and I'll cheerfully work on the next thing. I won't get stuck and I won't fall apart. I'll leave you with a verse by Ankyo Roshi. It's from her book, A Little Bit of Zen. She says, "We can't lose our heads. Oh, Bodhisattva, losing your head doesn't help. Instead, extend your hand. Offer your words, your wisdom, your effort. That's what a Bodhisattva does, day in and day out, serving all of life."